Hello and welcome to Ordinary, a podcast that aims to help Christians live for Christ in everyday life. My name is Josh Bannister, and each week I sit down with a couple of UK pastors, Graham Nichols and Mark Bentham. Chances are you probably enjoy some form of true crime entertainment, whether it's books or podcasts, films or documentaries. Our culture has become quite obsessed with these stories over recent years, and in today's main bit, we ask why. We'll also talk the ending of Job in the Sunday Roundup, and churches breaking lockdown rules in the news section. So enjoy the episode, I'll catch you later.
My name is Graham Nichols.
My name is Mark Bentham.
And I'm Josh Bannister, and you're listening to Ordinary. Welcome back. Go on.
Well, I was just going to say, it's not just Josh Bannister, is it? It's Josh Birthday Boy Bannister today.
Yeah. Hey?
We've got a little jingle for you, Josh.
One, two, three, four.
Happy birthday to you. Come on, Graham. Happy birthday
to you. I thought you were
just the last bit. Happy birthday, dear Josh. Happy birthday to you. Oh, by the time you listen to this, you'll be
harmony.
2 days. I know, check us out. That is what happens when you kind of sing live on a Sunday morning.
I want to hear the harmony on the Sunday morning.
Oh, well, we don't want to, you know.
We don't want to show off, because otherwise all you guys are doing recordings and think, oh, we're just going to give up now.
I'm on the verge already. I can't believe what I'm hearing.
I know, it's a whole new magic, isn't it?
It may not come. You'll have to go through and sort of bend the notes up and down a little bit when you perfect this.
Pitch correction, don't worry.
Yeah, I'll do a bit of that.
Happy birthday to you.
Yeah, well, so what's the big celebration today going to be? You're going to sort of go out and meet 100 people?
Yeah, I'm planning to put on a festival, actually, and have a big camp overnight and have an absolute riot. Actually, I'm going to just grout my downstairs toilet, I think. I've done some tiling. I think I'll spend the evening grouting. So that's how... I don't know, that's how I'm celebrating.
Josh, you know how to live, don't you?
Yes, I do.
Ooh,
28 years old, grouting in the toilet.
Yep.
Wow, there you go. Hey,
it's all good, I'm learning things, you know, and that's what I need to be at 28. I need to be older and wiser.
Yeah. Well, anyway, congratulations.
Thank you.
Sunday Roundup show, did the sermon pass real slow? Did you plant some seed to grow? It's Roundup time, what do you know?
We have just come to the end of our Job series on the Sunday morning, and I suppose on Sunday we were focusing on sort of whether this was, well, a question we're asking is whether this was really a happy ending for Job. There is some reconciliation, there is some restoration, but there is a lot of things that are still tragic and that are potentially, you know, it's tough to call it a happy ending because, you know, he doesn't get his children back. He has other children and...
Yeah.
There's lots of loss still. So, yeah, what are your thoughts on that particular question, and also just, I don't know, any summarising thoughts on the Job series generally?
Yeah, I mean, I know me and Mark have really enjoyed preaching it and learned a lot through the process of preaching it, and hopefully taught some new stuff as well. But, yeah, I think it is a happy ending. There's lots of good stuff for Job in his life, but I think it makes us long for a proper happy ending because he doesn't get his kids back. And he does die, even though he's full of years, he does die, and his kids will die after him, his new kids. So in the end, it's not a completion of the whole kind of process of restoration, because still sin is around and the consequences of sin. So I think it does a good job of saying, well, there is a kind of resolution, but it's not a complete resolution.
Yeah.
And then it makes us plug then into the big narrative of what's Job finally about. It's about the servant of the Lord suffering, which will be fulfilled in Jesus, and the restoration that comes through him. But yeah, it also makes us realize in our experience we can have seasons of great blessing, and we might die old and happy, but it won't be a complete happy ending unless we understand the bigger story.
And I think that you're not meant to think, are you, that at the end of every suffering that everything's going to be okay in this life.
Yeah.
It is the bigger picture. And, you know, just as his suffering is extreme, so is the kind of what he receives back in blessing is extreme as well.
Yeah.
To kind of highlight that kind of... So, yeah, makes you long for, doesn't it? The greater reconciliation.
And he doesn't get the answers, does he, as well? So it's not a complete resolution. You think, maybe only in glory, I don't know, now or later, he will get to know what was actually happening behind the scenes.
Time for news now. Give us your views. News.
So we're still in the midst of the second lockdown here in the UK, and there's been a BBC headline this week about a particular church in London who took the decision to kind of, disregard the rules and hold a service. And police did actually attend and tried to shut it down. They stopped people from going in. And this particular church leader has spoken about the reasons why he's done that. And I guess it's evoked a reaction on both sides of that, or at least opened a conversation about his actions and whether that was appropriate, whether he crossed some sort of line, whether these government guidelines cross some sort of line spiritually or morally that enable us to take that decision. But even in any case, it's bizarre and fascinating to see a headline like that in the news. You know, a sort of headline you don't ever expect to read, that police shut down a church service. What are your thoughts on everything that went on there, Graham? I know that you have a personal connection, I think, with this particular church leader. But
Yeah, I know Reagan King, who's involved, and he's a faithful pastor in a church in London. There's particular circumstances of the people there, a lot of whom are quite poor and quite needy and can't access stuff online in quite the same way. And he's sort of taken a judgment, which is a combination of let's push the boundaries of the law because this is more of a support group kind of thing. So he's sort of pushing the boundaries of that way. But he's also is kind of recognising that it's slightly outside of the law as kind of stated. And he's saying there's a higher law. And as a kind of another strand, the law that's being imposed on us is not really reasonable and lawful. So there's a number of sort of strands to the argument, and I think for the witness of the church, he has to be careful, and everyone else has to be careful about quite what argument they're making, where, you know, on what basis they're arguing, and to make sure they're articulating that clearly. But I think in the end, we have to respect people who've before God reached a decision with their church leaderships to say this is the moment we think there's a higher priority here, and we will take the risk because we think this is more important. So I personally respect him for doing that. That's not where we would be at as a church at this point.
Any thoughts on that, Mark?
Well, I think what it does demonstrate is begin to demonstrate the kind of strong views that are within the church, wider church. There are those who would be absolutely where Reagan is, and there are others who are meeting in that way. You know, he's not the only church, I think it would be fair to say. So there are those on that end, and there are those completely other end who, you know, haven't even met back since we've gone into lockdown in March, and would be very against meeting either as a part of submitting to the government on when it's legal, but also because of fear of COVID and their circumstances. And I think in all of this, isn't it, it's maintaining the unity. And as Graham, you know, being charitable, love, and bear with one another. So I might not agree, but even how I agree or disagree, we must be doing it in love and respectfully, and hearing one another as well, to hear the different sides, to balance it out.
And I think there is a good amount of that, but because I have actually interacted a little bit on the sort of message boards, particularly on the Premier reporting on this, because I think what you said, Mark, is so helpful, because like it's sad sometimes when you read people writing comments like, if he were a real Christian, he wouldn't have done something like this. And you think that is so uncharitable. It's lacking so much grace and understand and seeking to understand. And that's a real shame. That to me is like as much of a tragedy as the whole like police being at the service thing. It's like, come on guys, we need to listen to each other, understand that he is a pastor who cares about his sheep, and he loves the Lord, and he wants to do the right thing, and he's made a conscious decision. And you just want to see grace in the way that people talk about it, right?
Absolutely. And I think that's really going to be important going forward, because this is going to continue for a while. Decisions will be made, churches will do different things, and actually our unity as brothers and sisters in Christ is far bigger, and you know, we may disagree whether people are right, wrong, sinful, not sinful, but actually I think how we speak to one another, how we encourage, challenge, build one another up, I think is far more important this day than lots of other stuff.
Okay, it's time for the main bit, but before we jump into the main bit, I've got a special new present for you two. It's my birthday, I'm handing out the gifts today.
Oh man, the gift to Josh.
Yep, this is a new jingle for the main bit.
Okay.
What's that coming over the hill? Is it the main bit? Is it the main bit? Will we get copyright sued because of this jingle? This little jingle? What's that coming over the hill? It's Graham Nichols. It's Graham Nichols. Mark Fentham's coming as well.
Okay.
Wow. I don't think I've ever had my name in a jingle before. So excited.
Did that's quite a long fade out on that.
Yeah, yeah. Did either of you two get the reference from the actual original song?
Yes.
Okay, good. That's good. Because that's quite critical to the jingle, do you know what I mean?
Okay.
I think it's a well-known song.
It's pretty well-known, and it's pretty old, so I'm hoping that people don't actually copyright sue us for that one. But yeah.
Okay. I'm lost, but that's all right.
You know? That's virtually, all right. I'll send you a link, Mark, in the WhatsApp group.
In the show notes.
But virtually every week on when we put songs up, we get a copyright claim, but it's normally from Denmark.
Okay.
It's not in the UK.
Okay, cool. That's fine.
I don't know why we get that.
Listen, today we're going to be talking about our obsession as a culture with true crime. It's something that is, I think, probably always been around, that human beings have probably always been interested in law and order and justice and stories that go around and make the rounds. But I think in recent years, it's blown up because of really well-made documentaries and podcasts. For me, it started with, and for a lot of people, I think it started with a podcast called Serial, which is a story about, I think his name was Adnan Syed, was the young man who was involved in that murder case. And the podcast just blew up, just millions of people listened to that, and subsequent podcasts made by that production company. And then you had Making a Murderer, which was an enormous show on Netflix, and there's been a couple of seasons of that. It's an ongoing case in the States. And then just multiple really well-made documentaries, short films on different cases. Some that come to mind for me was there's one called Don't F with Cats. I don't know if either of you saw that. It was a really interesting one. There was one called The Staircase. Whose wife fell down the stairs. Maybe he killed her, maybe he didn't. One I'm watching right now, which is trending top five, maybe, might be top two, called Trial 4, which is a guy called Sean Ellis in the States who was incarcerated for 20 years. I haven't finished it yet, and I'm not going to give any spoilers, but essentially for a cop killing that potentially he didn't do. Why do you think... we have this obsession in our culture, in the States and in the UK and probably elsewhere, with true crime?
Yeah, it's a great question. That's what I was pondering on, because I was talking to a few people who were doing it. Someone I know who listens to Sword and Scale, which is another podcast, and Case Files, which is one from Australia, and Serial Killers, which is one from the USA, which maybe it came out of the serial one.
Yeah, maybe.
And so I started to ponder, what's the appeal? And I like listening to crime novels. So, but quite brutal ones when you think about it. When I think about some of the stories I was listening to yesterday, I was listening to a Harry Bosch novel kind of on my headphones while I was walking the dog and thinking, now it's not true crimes, but it's something that sort of, they cross-fertilise, don't they? Drama crimes and true crimes, sometimes dramatisations of true crimes and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, why am I fascinated by this and quite macabre thing? And I'm not sure I fully understand. It may be morbid curiosity. Mm-hmm. It may be because it's worlds that we don't understand. Mm-hmm. I know, speaking to someone, they're fascinated not so much by the crime, but by the capture. So they're really interested in how people like that get caught.
Yep.
The sort of whole process of finding them, catching them.
Yes.
Putting them to trial, so they're pretty interested in that part, not so much the actual description of the crime. So I get that.
Yes.
You know, it's just interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the appeal. It's the entertainment, but also the interesting fascination factor. Mm-hmm. And I think that spills over to why it's good and why it's bad.
I wonder whether it also resonates just for the whole, we just like a good story.
Yeah.
And actually here's a story that grips us. There's mystery, there's intrigue. Mm-hmm. It's so outside of our normal life that it kind of, it's so different that it breaks in. I wonder whether it resonates with our sense of justice, that we want to see justice.
Mm-hmm.
Partly we want to see that these terrible things are brought to justice, because the thought of living in a world where these things just are happening and no one's holding to account, so it kind of just helps us to kind of make that connection. Mm-hmm. I wonder.
I think there's also a sense of a lot of it's to do with outrage. I feel like things like Serial, Making a Murderer, Trial 4, these things are for the most part are about freeing people who have been incarcerated perhaps wrongly. And yeah. So like you said, Graham, like a lot of that is about the court process and the police and detective work that goes on and the corruption that's inside those systems. So yes. It becomes less about the actual crime, the violence or anything, and more about the process and about, does this need reform? And so I think there is that outrage aspect where you're watching where you say, I can't believe this happened. I can't believe these people acted this way and no one did anything, you know?
Yeah, I think. But sometimes even the ones where the right person gets caught, there is still a fascination, which mm-hmm. I can't quite put my finger on. Like my go-to would be to watch drama or documentary would probably be sort of crime-related, and sometimes quite serious crime-related stuff, mm-hmm. rather than romance.
Mm-hmm.
And I do sometimes wonder why, but mm-hmm. I think there is a sort of a worthy fascination in it.
Right.
But I think there's some other good reasons that we'll maybe talk about a bit later as well.
Yeah, so I mean, the question that we want to lead into is, as Christians, is this sort of content okay to be consuming? Are there, you know, well, let's talk about the positives and negatives that you see as a result of sort of consuming this kind of show or podcast or whatever.
Yeah, so some of the positives in just kind of thinking about it, preparing for this was, I think it is good to see that the trajectory of evil, that unrestrained evil, is ugly and it's damaging. And in a way, it's a tribute to God's restraining grace that we're all not this bad. I know sometimes we think we might not be. But so I think just watching the trajectory of evil and having an explanation for it. Anyone else watching that is just outraged. They're outraged at the injustice, like you were just talking about, Josh, or they're outraged at this brutal terrible crime that's been committed that's maybe against a child or against a vulnerable woman or something. And so we're outraged. But actually, as Christians, we understand the root of that, even though the fruit of that is different in different people's lives. So I think it's good to think about that. It's also good to think about I call it the lineage, but that's probably not the right word, but how crime goes through families. And it helps us think, okay, you know, in God's world, things work in certain ways. And generally, parents who are criminals often breed children who are criminals. Parents who are angry, parents who are addicted, kind of tend to pass that on. And so it helps us kind of understand that and think, okay, so how can we break that chain, both by God's special grace in Christ, but also by God's common grace in how we might be able to intervene and stuff like that. So those are some of the positives.
Mm-hmm. Any thoughts on sort of positives, Mark? Do you think it's healthy or unhealthy to be consuming this kind of stuff?
It's interesting because as Graham was talking, I was I don't actually probably watch that much true crime stuff, so the mm-hmm. documentary stuff, but I do read a lot of kind of crime mysteries mm-hmm. or listen to it or watch kind of shows that are kind of like Criminal Minds spin-offs yeah. on stuff. But interesting, as we're talking, resonated, I remember that Jim Packer, who was a famous British theologian, read a lot of, you know, there was a whole article on it, the Gospel Coalition, about him and his reading of mystery. And they were kind of asking, you know, why do you do that? You know, what is it? You know, is it okay to read this kind of stuff? And he said, well, it's fun. But mm-hmm. he also made the point that actually it is actually ultimately the gospel story that allows for all these kind of mystery stories. But actually it sits behind the whole sense of why we enjoy it as well, because there is good and there is evil, because there is a saviour. So in one sense, as we watch shows with a gospel framework, we can watch them with confidence, knowing that actually there is going to be justice, right, whether it's right or wronged. And actually the whole basis of why we connect with it is because it connects with our story. I think whether you're a believer or not believer, you don't quite know that, but all stories, true, are based ultimately around the true gospel story, aren't they? Or of a God who comes, evil enters, the good guy comes, and justice is won. And I think when we read true crime stories, it's just kind of putting us into those, or watch true crime stuff, we're putting into that bigger gospel narrative as you kind of look at the whole that makes sense.
Yeah, that's fascinating. So like all these little stories of like crime and action followed by a reckoning and a judgment and a sentence are all a sort of a mini narrative within this bigger meta narrative of what the gospel's talking about, which is ultimate sin and reckoning and judgment and sentence. And like we relate to that, I suppose, as Christians, and it's cool to draw those lines to see how that connects actually to the gospel. What are some of the, I guess, moving on to the negatives and things that we should be, if not negatives, but at least wary of while we're consuming content like
I think there's just one other positive.
Okay.
Is that it can help us to have compassion because it's so outside of our life. Actually, compassion in an area that I'm not quite aware of. So compassion for those who have been afflicted in this way, affected by the nature, compassion for those who have to deal with this kind of thing every day.
Yeah.
I think it also, compassion for the innocent who has been wrongly convicted.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think in that sense, there is a sense where I can, you know, partly it fuels my prayers as well, because actually I'm lamenting out to the Lord for the world that is a mess and longing for Jesus. So in one sense, it only fuels my compassion, but also my longing for that restoration reflected in prayers.
That's really helpful. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And in a way that leads into some of the possible negative, which is the positive was challenging our kind of self-righteousness and provoking our compassion. The negative is it might fuel our self-righteousness, where we look at those things and we look down on those people and actually hate or resent them, and it fuels our sense that we're much better than them. And it is right to be appalled, say, at paedophilia or, you know, serial killers. And it's right to have a sort of moral outrage that is proportionately more than for some other crimes, like, you know, stealing a newspaper or a sweet from a shop or something. There is a difference.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of the sort of potential for us to, or in terms of how they stand before God and how we should view them, we should still show compassion and be willing to even pray for them if it was the right context, and to not say just because they've done that they're beyond forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in practice, in our heads, we often kind of do write off people who are that bad and think, well, they've just gone beyond, and I'm so much better than them. So I think that self-righteousness thing is fueled sometimes by it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Matthew 5 then becomes really important in that sense, isn't it? So, you know, we've talked about this in sermons at times, whereby the whole idea that, you know, Jesus says about even if you're angry with your brother, then you can murder.
Yeah.
And those seeds are there. So that keeps me from that self-righteousness, because although I have not committed literal murder, so there is degrees of sin in that,
mm-hmm.
there's still the heart things are still there. Same with any sexual sin, you know, in terms of the degrees go again, but we stand on the same spectrums, as it were. And that guards me from that self-righteousness of thinking, actually, aren't I much better? Because actually I know that the seeds of all these things are being demonstrated in my own life. So actually I can begin to see how those things can come about. It's not that I'm so different from them.
Yeah, yeah. I love this point, because like a little, it reminds me a lot of the film Joker, which I wrote a blog about when it first came out, because it made me really think about these things, about the whole notion of there is no crime of which I can conceive that I could not myself have committed. That idea, right, of like actually when we demonize people who do wrong things and make them so other that we disassociate and say I could never do that, that is far too simplistic. Like, the truth is, it's much more subtle than that. And within us all is the potential to do wrong, and to do wrong in an extreme way, and to have compassion and to complicate and understand the complexity of a scenario that leads to a terrible crime is so much more, I think, appropriate than to simplify it and just demonize and make something, make an action other, and like, that's not me. That there's good people and there's bad people, and I'm a good person. It's, that's not the world, is it? We're, it's not as clear as that. It's a spectrum, like you said, Mark, and we're all on it. And understanding that we all have the potential to do those things, I think, is massively helpful with compassion and understanding our own story and relationship to God and good and evil and things.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think it's really helpful to challenge people on that, where they might say mass murder or even individual murder or paedophilia, say, I could never do that. And in one sense, you understand exactly what they're saying, because that desire hasn't been kindled in you to do that. And you think, this is so gross and horrible, appalling. Mm-hmm. And yet the seeds of that really are in us in terms of our selfishness, self-gratification. It's just, it hasn't borne fruit in that way. And I think challenging people on that sometimes is useful, because it kind of drives us away from that self-righteousness.
Yeah.
Do you want another point?
Let's go.
Yep. Negative. I think desensitizing is a thing.
Okay.
As well, just worth thinking about. Whether it, even though it gets us into another world where we become less appalled, the more we listen, the more it becomes kind of commonplace.
Mm-hmm.
And so we kind of accept things. So I think that can be an issue. Maybe it's not the biggest one, but I think it is a thing.
Yeah. Building on that, do you think it's like, because I would say that in some ways, like if you think about Jesus's day and Jesus's, particularly his execution and the sort of gruesome nature of that, like often I think that we're completely the opposite now, in that we're completely sanitized from the reality of violence and things, and we don't have an appreciation for the level of evil that there is. Do you think there's an argument for that? I mean, the people who were living in Jesus's day would have had a much closer relationship with violence than we do.
Yeah, they had a more immediate relationship, but probably not all of them and not all the time. I guess we have more opportunity to watch more violence than them, but most of it is just simulated and kind of on screen. So we have a different kind of relationship. So I think we probably overall have more, but it's not live action, mostly.
Yeah, thankfully.
You know, similarly to death, you know, they would have had more exposure to death, like actual people around them dying. And we probably have more exposure to death through dramas that we watch, but probably less in person. So I guess it's different. But I think watching it and listening to it, to podcasts, to the point where we stop thinking this is appalling is a kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And also, go on.
No, I was just going to agree. I think it is that detachedness, you know, just thinking, you know, back in Jesus' day, but you think even through the medieval ages, you know, the public hangings, the public kind of death penalties, actually everyone would be, or the burnings, you'd be present, but you're not detached from it. It's not, you know, there was something quite horrific about it. The danger for us is that we become detached, just something on our screen, it's not real. Yeah, and actually, therefore, you do become desensitized. And actually you don't feel the horror as you ought to. And the longing therefore.
I think as well there's a thing just about priorities, really, that it's a bit of a simple, boring point in a way, about what you're spending your time doing, to say, could I be using the time more usefully? I'm even hesitating and I'm ignoring, because I think this is such a dull point in one way, but I think it is. It's kind of the fundamental battle of our lives, is what are we going to make most important at this moment? You know, and of course, God wants us to enjoy the richness of lots of things in life, colour and drama and interest and learning and all those things. And, you know, moments of entertainment and moments of thought. So that's not to decry any activity. But I suppose if you fill your minds with this, and this is the thing that fascinates and excites you, if you spend most of your time doing this, you're crowding out relationship with God and interesting stuff about God that you could be thinking about. So I think there's just that priority thing to think about. If it becomes kind of very habitual, and if it becomes what you fill the space with when you're, as one of our listeners, folding the washing, or when you're, you know, walking the dog, if it's always true crime stuff, and, you know, when you get an idle moment in the evening, if it's always that, there's something gone wrong with your priorities, I think.
There's something gone wrong with your brain.
with your priorities, I think.
Okay, priorities. Yeah.
Did I say brain?
No, I just wondered if you might. No, okay, that's good. All right, well, yep. Any final thoughts, Mark or Graham, generally?
Mark's going to have the final word.
Okay, you have the final word.
No, I was just going to ask. So when you're grouting tonight, what are you going to be listening to?
Yeah. Well, it's a good point, because I do listen to Sword and Scale, but I also love to listen to Unbelievable. I love to listen to Reasonable Faith.
Ordinary.
I don't tend to listen to that one as much. The Bible Project, good stuff on there. Gospel Coalition has some good stuff. So I think, like you're right, moderation. But it's an argument you could make for, you know, anything, really.
Absolutely.
Isn't it? You could apply that principle to anything. So yeah, that's great. Okay, so
we'd love to hear what people listen to, and if we've missed out some big reason, plus or minus,
yes,
we'd love to hear it.
Great.
I didn't mean to have the last word. Honest.
ordinary@cchh.org.uk is the email address. You know it by now. Get in contact with us. Questions, advice, thoughts on today's episode, anything you want to say, just get in contact. We have a guest on with us next week, so make sure you don't miss that podcast. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.